Carla.
Hi, welcome to the Green Front. Thanks so much, Brad and Desi. Always love the Green News Report. They do it with such sass. I love it. Just the facts, but with a little bit of attitude thrown in as well. And Lord knows we need as much humor as we can possibly get. And Stephen Colbert always provides that, especially when he does a little bit on climate change and how silly we're being in this country about not realizing the scientific realities of it. And that point, the scientific realities of climate change, was brought home to me this past week. I just got back from Bastrop, Texas. Going to be speaking with someone from that area in the second half of the show, actually, a radio personality who is very interested in environmental issues there. Bill Page will join me. The first half, we're hoping to get to speak with Lisa Hoya. She is the co-founder of an organization called Climate Parents, trying to organize parents, mothers and fathers across the country who should be concerned about what's happening with our climate and our weather, trying to connect the dots for more of them. And in the meantime, I am very pleased to welcome to the program my co-host, whenever he's available, D.R. Tucker. Hey, Devon.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good. There's lots to talk about today. I've shared a little bit with you about my experience in Texas. I had no idea that they were the area that was burning up 2 years ago. In fall of 2011, we were talking about how Governor Perry was not believing in climate change while half his state was on fire. Well, Bastrop County lost almost 1,700 homes in that fire, something like $350 million of damage. And so going into that heart of Central Texas, hardest hit by the fires, really hit home for me. You know, what's at stake for, you know, Americans in this country? And I'll be talking to Bill Page about, you know, how much that's understood, the connection between the drought that they had leading up to this, one of the worst fires in U.S. history, to, you know, the problems that they're still seeing because things have not turned around as far as the drought. See if that's really understood by the citizens there, not to in any way imply that they're not aware of it. It's just you don't hear about it so much. And I got some blank stares during my talk when I was talking about 400 parts per million. So obviously a lot more education needed.
Well, it may be understood by some of the citizens, but you know, looking at Texas, how many of the politicians understand it? That number is probably in the single digits based on some of the remarks we've had from politicians from Texas about the issue over the past decade or so, at least.
That's right. We do have some good news from Kansas, and that's what we hope to talk to Lisa about. The school board there voting to actually approve new multi-state science standards for public schools that treat both evolution and climate change as key concepts to be taught regularly from kindergarten through 12th grade. What a concept there. That is progress, though, especially for Kansas.
Exactly. It's a climate progress, if you will.
Speaking of climate progress, Lisa's on the line now, so I just want to bring her into the conversation before we get started. Lisa Hoyas, thanks so much for being on the Green Front. First time, and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
D.R. Tucker and I talk about climate change each and every week here. We're kind of obsessed with the topic. I can't believe it's taken us this long to get you on. You, of course, with your co-founder, Mark Kurtzgaard, started a really important group that really is close to my green heart, Climate Parents, because, after all, who more than mothers and fathers should be more concerned about what's happening with our climate, with our weather, with our children's future than parents. So before we get to the specifics, especially what happened in Kansas, which we always like to bring the good news to the forefront on the Green Front, just give us a little bit of background about how it was that you saw such an organization like Climate Parents was needed, how there was perhaps a gap in all the environmental nonprofits out there doing such great work, specifically on climate, perhaps a gap in terms of one addressing families.
Yeah, thank you again, Betsy, for having me. And so Climate Parents, I guess the idea for it emerged because both Mark Kurtzgaard, who's become a dear friend, and myself, as people who had been activated on climate for many years, him as a journalist and myself as a campaigner, really started to feel differently about the urgency of the climate crisis. Once we had kids, it just became much more visceral, much more scary, quite frankly, especially as they project into the future. And, you know, on sort of the arc of my expected lifetime, you know, we already see things getting horrible, but then you kind of factor in and sort of lengthen out the arc for a child's lifetime, and it's really, really scary. From the droughts to the fires, we're already seeing those things, but as we all know, and anyone who reads Bill McKibben or science knows, it's just, you know, going to hit these thresholds of completely unsustainable, crashing kind of food systems, water systems, all of that. And so it kind of brought us into this idea that, like, any parent, part of our job description needs to be fighting climate change and promoting and using our political power to, as voters, as, you know, people who are civically engaged, to scale up clean energy and also proactively look for ways to be resilient and adapt to climate change, because even though we, of course, need to urgently scale back emissions, reduce emissions, and scale up alternatives, we also need to just, as you guys know, embrace the sad reality that we're going to have to invest in infrastructure to protect our communities and our kids as much as possible from the impacts we're already seeing.
It's a very noble effort on your part. How has it been in terms of engaging parents? Do you run into scenarios where there are parents who turn out to be deniers, and how do you sort of deal with that sort of wall of ignorance? Betsy and I always talk about, you know, the frustration of dealing with deniers. How do you what's your tactic for dealing with people who don't seem to recognize science?
I guess to push back against that tendency in our work, we haven't really drawn the ire of sort of the deniers out there who are probably, you know, many of whom are probably also parents. We really, it's been kind of the opposite. Like, we seem to have touched a nice nerve, I guess, of people who are saying, wow, I've been waiting for a group that would really try to move parents. In terms of how we deal with deniers, just in the scope of our work, with the effort we're undertaking right now around the Next Generation Science Standards, is kind of, you know, it's really pushing up against folks in states where there has been pushback on climate issues, there have been efforts to attack climate science. We're really trying to say, you know, there may be those people in Texas, excuse me, they're there too, but in Kansas and Kentucky, but what we're really going to try to do is to mobilize and move parents for whom it's really common sense that, of course, their kids should be learning 21st century science in school, and in addition to that, they should be learning climate science. And then we're trying to kind of make the links that I think are more and more organic for people, in the way Bill McKibben was asking us to connect the dots a few years ago. You know, people who maybe climate change wasn't a huge issue for them, but in the wake of historic droughts and extreme weather events, they're starting to connect the dots. And so those parents are like, glad you're here. How can we help? Let me sign this petition. Let me speak at the school board meeting.
I'm glad to hear that, Lisa, and I know there is that, you know, emerging population of parents out there growing increasingly concerned, as they should. And yet, I'm sure you've also seen the opposite, where, you know, parents are so busy, they really are not tuned in to Bill McKibben and 350.org and having just passed the scary milestone of 400 parts per million. I find it, you know, as I say often on the show, even in my own progressive, you know, community, Mill Valley, Marin County, Bay Area, where you are also based, and I was just in, you know, Texas, and my goodness, I had blank stares when I asked the audience, who's heard of Bill McKibben, who's heard of, you know, the fact that we're past 400 parts per million, and a couple of people raised their hand in the audience, you know, that they knew about the Keystone tar sand protest, and it kind of blows my mind, as I'm sure it does yours, that more people, and specifically parents, are not, you know, as alarmed about this as they should be. So I think there's both Americas going on. You know, there
oh,
are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, I know I'm on your show, so I'm talking about Bill McKibben a lot. But, you know, when we did the petition in Kansas and Kentucky, we really tried to keep the issues simple and clear, you know, that just on basic sort of ethical grounds, you know, that kids deserve to be taught the truth and true, accurate 21st century science, and they need to learn climate science, too, as a basis for, you know, building the foundation for them to be part of identifying the solutions we need and, you know, putting in a fact or two about things that people on the ground have experienced, namely, for example, in Kentucky, 68 of their 72 counties were declared federal emergency areas last year by the Secretary of Agriculture, the National Secretary of Agriculture, because of extreme drought. And so a couple of two references, it just kind of brings it home for people who are those kind of regular moms and dads who aren't, you know, part of 350.org.
So has there already been any sort of pushback in Kansas about these new standards, or have the usual suspects been organizing against them? And the thing that, when I read this story, struck me as a potential, maybe not so much a risk, but a potential outcome for the organized deniers, is that a possibility of a push to try to get more kids into sort of private and parochial schools that are presumably not covered by, you know, independent schools that are presumably not covered by these standards, to sort of push denial in those schools? Is that something that is a legitimate concern, or can there be some sort of, you know, reality-based teaching in those private schools as well?
It's an interesting question. Like, there is a history of, in Kansas, of sort of an anti-science narrative, and that really came to the fore in 2005 when a legislator was really pushing to have, like, teach both sides, if you will, which he thinks there's two sides of, on creationism versus evolution. But there was a lot of pushback from other people in Kansas, like, we're kind of becoming a laughingstock. This is, you know, even in the world stage, like, that there was a big story in the news back in 2005 about that effort. And as it relates to climate change, some of those folks who were supportive of, you know, the pro-creationism approach, a lot of those folks, and you're probably not surprised to hear it, are also climate change deniers. Mm-hmm. And so those folks are still out there, and they're still active. And if you read the press that came out of Kansas yesterday, there's definitely some quotes from those kinds of people. There's something called the Bluegrass Institute, I believe it's called. And, you know, if you go to their website, there's a ton of denialism there. But when we were working with the activists, the climate parent activists in Kansas, you know, we really talked a lot about the importance of really consciously, in whatever we say and do, trying to move past the, like, is it true or not true? Like, most people in their common sense see that climate change is here, climate change is real. If, you know, the Pew polls about what most Americans believe says that most Americans believe that it's real and happening and caused by, you know, burning fossil fuels. So we just try to, like, then move on. Like, this is important science for kids to know so that we can find climate solutions to help us address the impacts we're already seeing hit our state that are hurting our agriculture, that are hurting our communities. You know, let's build the solutions, and kids need a strong scientific foundation in order to do that. So we try not to stay so much on the people who are the deniers and take up too much airtime as it is out there.
We agree. We just can't help but mention it from time to time in contrast with what's happening with our weather. And, you know, you mentioned this group Bluegrass, and meantime the grass is burning in Colorado once again. There's a wildfire raging outside of Colorado Springs, you know, almost a year after, you know, wildfires hit the same area. You just have to wonder, are people connecting the dots between climate change and, you know, all the, not just the droughts and the wildfires, but the flooding in some of the same areas, you know, just things changing drastically from day to day in terms of just temperature, you know, fluctuations, all that. And so I guess that's, we absolutely have to close that gap between the deniers on the one hand and the climate scientists who are, you know, basically screaming, and climate scientists don't usually shout at us to pay attention. and look at, you know, I think that's what you're trying to do, and that's one of the reasons I love climate parents, is really speak to the middle of the country. I mean that literally and figuratively, both middle politically and also the flyover states, if you will, that are most, you know, severely being impacted by a lot of the climate impacts, other than Superstorm Sandy, which obviously hit the Northeast coast very hard. And, you know, we're not hit so much here, you know, in beautiful West Coast California, but it's those folks in Kansas, in Texas, in Iowa, you know, in Oklahoma, who are feeling, you know, the impacts of climate change and extreme weather events most. And one can't help but wonder, are they putting two and two together and saying, oh my, if this is caused by climate change, shouldn't we be, you know, reacting as if there is an emergency and there's urgency? And in your, from your perspective, is that beginning to happen And, of course, this Board of Education decision in Kansas is a good sign that it's starting, but, of course, it has to happen wider and faster and louder.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said, and in Colorado, like you said, you know, the wildfires drove thousands of people from their homes and, you know, destroyed a lot of wooded areas and forcing evacuations and, you know, very, very scary stuff. And I do think that, and McKibben is, I keep quoting him, but he's good at, like, seizing the day and just calling attention to the fact that these events are happening. And, you know, we can probably expect, again, the hottest summer on record. And those are very teachable moments. And I think his quote was, unfortunately, because it's painful and sad, and lives are being lost, and homes are being lost, and livelihoods are being lost. You know, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of teachable moments that connect us up between, you know, our fossil fuel burning and what we're doing to, you know, quite frankly, ruin the planet. And I think climate change is a very overwhelming issue for a lot of people. So part of what Climate Parents is trying to do is acknowledge that it's happening and sort of pivot towards solutions and the need for us to, as parents, as voters. I mean, there's over 100 million parents in our country. Many in that demographic that's really active as you know, civically involved people involved in our schools and our communities and our sports teams and our voting, most importantly. And I think we just need to kind of do a lot of education with folks to say, yes, it's happening, and here's what you can do about it, and really pivot toward these changes we need to make and these energy systems we need to promote. And you know, California, we're really blessed with AB 32, the Global Warming Solutions Act, that seeks to get us to 1990 GHG levels by the year 2020. And it's groundbreaking, but you'll be not surprised to hear that companies here in California, even though it's existing law and it's been so for 7 years, try over and over again to tear it down. And Valero and Tesoro did that in 2010 with a ballot initiative that was soundly and fiercely rejected by California voters. It would have rolled back our Global Warming Solutions Act, and we defeated that. But, like, right now, there's a low-carbon fuel standard in California that would reduce the carbon intensity of fuels by a certain percentage and really would promote biofuels and cleaner-burning fuels. And not surprisingly, the oil companies are waging a highly financed major campaign against the implementation of what's already existing law. They're trying to, you know, turn back the clock and roll back the law. And so we kind of have to remain vigilant, but at the same time, we need to kind of fight for more state-level climate policy and clean energy policy and energy efficiency policy. I just read that Obama is softening his position right now on appliance energy efficiency standards, and some of this stuff gets wonky.
What?
But Obama just saw it. He's going to roll back, soften and review more time, take more time to review the appliance energy efficiency standards. And everyone always says, you know, energy efficiency is the low-hanging fruit in terms of the kinds of changes we can make quickly and cheaply. So my point being that the chasm we're trying to cross, and hopefully it's more of a bridge than a chasm, is we care about climate change as parents. We love our kids. We care for our kids. It poses a threat to our kids. And as active people in society, we're going to fight for these climate solutions, and we're going to fight for clean energy. We're going to make consumer choices that are about clean energy, and we really need to scale that up, I think, to rise to the level of you know, power that we need to transform how America does business, which is too close to fossil fuel companies and coal companies.
Here, here. I have another question, but DR, it's your turn. We just have a couple minutes left, so go ahead. Anything else for Lisa?
I was going to mention that there's a high irony in that issue, in that decision you mentioned by Obama, when Obama is, as of this broadcast, in Boston to try to rally people to vote for Ed Markey, the environmental champion of the Senate in Massachusetts. And number two, another bit of irony, that the first place I read about these Kansas standards is, ironically enough, FoxNews.com, which presumably, you know, isn't too thrilled with these new educational standards pointing to climate reality. How much of a headache? Is it the fact that there is either so much disinformation from some media sources and a lack of coverage from other media sources? This is something that Betsy and I have often discussed about how climate is the green elephant in the room for so much of the mainstream press. And, you know, how much more needs to be done? You know, God bless Chris Hayes on MSNBC for speaking about it, but damn it, there ought to be Chris Hayes's on every single network discussing the intensity and the passion that he discussed the issue.
Couldn't agree more. Well, just quickly on the media piece, we have a partner organization. So we're Climate Parents, and we're part of a broader umbrella organization called the Citizen Engagement Lab. And they have another climate project, so we're one of their climate projects. And the other one is called Forecast the Facts. And that one really is consciously going after the American Meteorological Association, getting them to really own the climate issue at a whole different level, and sort of targeting meteorologists that are deniers. And they really do have a focus on kind of rooting out climate denialism, exposing it, pointing out what groups like the Heartland Institute are doing, what the Kochs are doing. They have something that I think folks should just check out because it's really creative. It's kind of in the style of The Onion. But if you Google Kochify the news, you know, the Kochs are trying to buy the LA Times and a slew of other newspapers around the country. And so they kind of do a mock-up of what the news would look like if the Koch brothers owned the LA Times in terms of coverage of climate issues. So that's one place to go just to really be a part of trying to forecast the facts and not forecast, you know, denialism. So that's just a group I wanted to flag. And, I'll stop there.
You'll be happy to know that we've had Brad Johnson and Daniel Suwine on a couple of times. The minute Forecast the Facts launched, we were on it, because DR and I really do focus heavily on, you know, the media coverage or lack thereof, and how, you know, we need to have more regular programming, not just mentions and not just wait till the network newscasters decide this is an important story. By then it'll be too late on a lot of fronts to try to get dedicated programs on, you know, like ours, on a mainstream commercial outlet that, you know, really understands the issues and understands the players, you know, and the groups like Climate Parents that are on the forefront. You know, that should be getting national attention every day. I'm sure you don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I really do agree with that.
I want to have just one more topic to discuss with you, and that is oftentimes people say, well, you know, it's really great what you're doing, but forget it. It's not really going to happen with our generation, the parents, the baby boomers. It's really going to be up to our kids. And that makes me angry because of a couple of things. One, how dare we just dump it on them, and don't we do everything else we can for our kids in securing a, you know, healthy, livable, thrivable future? Why shouldn't that include a stable climate? And two, you know, boomers, you know, we supposedly think we've got forever. And shouldn't we start right away, you know, just helping to unpack the problem a bit before we turn it over to kids?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's like kind of complete abdication. You know, kids aren't in corporate boardrooms. Grown-ups are. And we need to take adult decisions about what's happening to the planet and protect our kids. And I do think that most parents are kind of hardwired to want to do whatever it takes to protect our kids. And, you know, when we learned that there was BPA leaching from baby bottles, there was a movement that emerged to change that. And when we hear about bullying on campuses, there's movements of parents who are working to address that and equip their kids to navigate, you know, the playground and high school and all that. And very similarly, I mean, like, our core conviction is when parents really understand the threat that climate change poses to their kids, and part B, when they kind of get enough kind of orientation around solutions that it doesn't feel overwhelming, where they can connect the dots to what they can do to take action, be it to get involved in the anti-pipeline movement or to promote sound climate science at their schools or to fight for clean energy and be a climate voter. I think they'll take action, and that's kind of the whole premise of Climate Parents. And we're doing something, so if any listener, you know, it's not just parents, it's grandparents, aunts, uncles, anyone who has a kid in your life that you love. We'd love for people to, like, go to climateparents.org and sign up, and we're doing sort of a Father's Day action that we want people to be a part of and share. It's not really an action so much, it's more like an online kind of sharing with other fathers, but we're trying to just, like, put out that kind of notion or that meme, as some people call these things now, that consciousness raising to other dads, like that it's part of your job description. So if people sign up today, you can be part of our Father's Day initiative, and that would be great.
Get the mommy meme and the daddy meme out there.
Yeah.
This is your
grandparents.
Children.
And like our lead petition person in Kentucky is a grandma. She's got kids, grandkids in public schools, and she's really concerned about them. And she's concerned about the drought. She's concerned she can't grow her front lawn anymore because of the drought. You know, some of the conditions are, some of the things that move people to action are really kind of intimate things in your day-to-day life.
No, yeah, it's a natural, and it is so obvious that parents, you know, who would be more invested in the future than moms and dads. And yet, from organizing a campaign called Don't Be Fueled, Mothers for Clean and Safe Vehicles, Hybrids Not Hummers, back in 2002, I know that parents are also the busiest. You know, they're the ones just trying to make a living, get the kids to school and to and fro, and sometimes it's hardest to get their attention, you know, to really focus in on these issues. So I really applaud you and Mark for starting Climate Parents and talk about the group often, and hope you'll tell people about our program. We cover climate change, every single side of it, up and down every week here on the show. So thanks.
And I really appreciate the chance to talk with the two of you. I would love to do it again sometime. Thank you.
We'll have you back for sure. Lisa Hoyos is director of Climate Parents, and also, we should say, not insignificantly important, the mother of two boys, which I know, if you're like me, Lisa, keeps you from even thinking about quitting this work. Sometimes
exactly.
It's frustrating as heck and doesn't pay the bills.
Right, absolutely. Thanks, you too. I appreciate it a lot, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, great. And happy Father's Day. And parents and grandparents, listen, this is for you, all of you out there. This matters, and it's here. Climate change is not a distant threat. As we said, it is something that has arrived, and there's no time to waste. So tune into your environment, and we'll all be the better off. We'll be back right after these messages talking to someone who lives in the heart of Texas and was there during some of the worst wildfires in U.S. history 2 years ago. I met him when I was in Bastrop, Texas last week, was interviewed on their solar-powered radio station, and decided he's got to come on our show, too. We'll be right back.